results from our paper, Mixed Covering Rates on Grass, and this is joint work with Karen Marr, who's in Waterloo right now, and Lucia Mora, my supervisor. So the outline is, I'm quickly going to go over definitions and applications of covering rates. We've seen a lot of that in Brett's presentation. And then I will present, extend some work that we did with graph homomorphisms and mixed qualitative independence graphs, as well as give constructions of covering arrays for tree cycles and bipartite graphs. So covering array, denoted CANKG, is a K by N array. This is the one note that I'll have to make because Brett, I think, uses the transpose, well, interchange throughout the presentation. So, so we have K rows and N columns, and actually the size of my covering array is going to be the number of columns. So we're trying to minimize the size of our covering array, which is the number of columns. The entries, once again, are going to be from ZG, and between any two rows, any pair from ZG occurs in some column. And if any pairs of rows satisfying this property will be said to be qualitatively independent. And the covering array number, denoted CAN, will be the smallest n such that a covering array of size n exists. So this is actually one of the examples that Brett showed as well. It's testing the wiring in our home. It's an on-off kind of example, so it's a binary case. We want to test the wiring between our rooms. So we've got the bedroom, hall, bathroom, and kitchen. They're all connected, and we want to test the wiring. So pairwise coverage, I guess, between the rooms. What we have here is a size 5 covering array, which means that we require 5 test suites in order to test pairwise coverage of this particular example here. And this is the optimal case in the binary case. So there are many applications of covering arrays, among which are circuit testing, network testing, and software testing, and we'll see some example of those. So for doing software testing, once again, the one idea of testing software is to test parameters individually. Of course, that gives us an exponential number of test suites, something that we don't want. And we've seen this asymptotic result given by Gargano, Corner, and Vaccaro, and the limits of the covering array number. So asymptotically, the size of the covering array number approaches log k times g over 2, where g is our alphabet size. And I'm trying to motivate the application of covering arrays. If we were to, let's say we have 10 parameters, each with 4 input values. So testing each parameter individually, so testing all possible combinations, we get 4 to the 10 over a million test suites. And this is obviously infeasible. Another way to do it is construct your covering array, and we need at most 29 test suites. So it reduces the number by a lot. If we were looking at a simple circuit like this, we have 4 input variables and 2 output variables here. So I'm trying to motivate actually the covering arrays on graphs. So we can see that x1, x2, and x3 are our 3 input variables that contribute to our first output over here. And x3 and x4 together contribute to our second output over here. And so we don't really need to test the interaction between x1 and x4, nor x2 and x4, because together they don't contribute to any output. And so what we could do is we could build this sort of an interaction graph between our input variables, and basically it indicates that x1 interacts with x2 and x3 towards an output, but x1 does not interact with x4 towards any output, and x3 does not contribute with x4 towards any output either. And so now we have a less restrictive covering array, and doing this here, we can sort of build a covering array of smaller size. Now, if we're looking at a software application, in the uniform case, so we're trying to calculate the area of triangles. These two triangles here, A1 and A2, given 5 input variables. We have our 3 points, P1, P2, P3, and our 2 heights, H1 and H2. So obviously the first area is going to be half base times height, and A1 depends on P1, P2, and H1, and A2 depends on P2, H2, and P3. Our 2 outputs are A1 and A2, the areas of our triangle. So once again, we see that we don't need to test these interactions between variables such as H1 and H2, for example, because H1 only plays an effect in the first area, and H2 plays an effect in the second area. So we don't need to. So we can build this graph here, which kind of looks like the original picture, and then we can build a covering array on this graph. In this particular case, all our variables, I should note, that have three possible input variables. So the alphabet size is 3, and it's uniform. So coming to a covering array, the covering array on a graph definition, it's denoted by C-A-N, capital G, little g. So this here is our graph, G, and this here is our alphabet, little g. It's a K by N array, and the size of our number of rows is going to be our vertex set, the size of our vertex set. Once again, entries are from ZG. This time, G is our alphabet, but as well as the weight on our vertices. So in the uniform case, all vertices have alphabet size G. And so in this particular example, we have 4 vertices, and it's the binary case. So we're testing the wiring, and it's the on-off combination again. Rows for adjacent vertices are going to be qualitatively independent, which means that between any two rows that are adjacent, we're going to find every pair occurring at least once in some column. So here we have our 00, 01, 10, 11 combination. So one thing to notice is this is an optimal covering array of size 4. We saw in the first example, let's just say that A and B don't interact. So what we have is we're testing the wiring once again in our house, but now we're saying that there's no connection between the bedroom and the kitchen, so why test pairwise coverage between those two rooms? And so what we were able to construct is a smaller covering array of size 4, as opposed to our first covering array that was of size 5, the number of columns. So building this graph, specifying which variables interact, can minimize the size of our covering array. If we look at our software testing example again, I specified that our input variables had alphabet size 3, it was uniform. But that, once again, is not a realistic approach. We know that most variables don't always have the same input value. And so we can allow for different number of values. And this is what we refer to as the mixed case, or the heterogeneous alphabet size. So different rows can have different alphabet sizes. But the idea is the same. We see the interaction between variables, build our graph, and then build our covering array on that particular graph. So a mixed covering array on a weighted graph G is denoted by C-A-N-G with the product of the little g's here. And these are basically the alphabet sizes on our vertices. It has mixed alphabet sizes for different rows in the graph. And then we define this variable PW of our graph, which is the largest product of weights of adjacent vertices. So if we have our graph, our weighted graph G here, we have our 4 variables, A, B, C, D. And we'll notice that A, C, D are binary, so they have alphabet size 2, but B has alphabet size 3. So if we're looking at our wiring example again, it just means that our hull, for example, has a dimmer light. So it could be on, off, or dim. So now if we want to build, what we have is that our covering array number has a lower bound of PW of G. So in this example here, our PW of G is 6, so it's the largest product weight between adjacent vertices, so it's our 2 times 3. And what we have here is an optimal size covering array because it achieved our lower bound of PW of G. Okay. I have to define graph homomorphisms in order to extend it to something that we defined, weight-restricted graph homomorphisms. So basically, a graph homomorphism is a function. It's a homomorphism that preserves the edge adjacency. So if we have an edge between our vertices V and W and G, then we're going to have an edge between the corresponding images in H. So a weight-restricted graph homomorphism is a graph homomorphism with an added restriction that if we're sending V and G to its image in H, then if V had the weight size 5, it can be sent to something of equal or larger weight, so equal or larger alphabet. So sending V with the alphabet size 5 to 7 is okay, but sending it from 5 to 4 is not allowed. It violates our property. So the following are theorems that we extended of work done by Marsh and Stevens, so Brett and Karen. For the uniform alphabet case, we extended it to the mixed case. If we have a weight-restricted graph homomorphism between G and H, then what we're able to do is give an upper, we can give a bound on the covering ray number of G if we have a weight-restricted homomorphism from G to H. By knowing the covering array on H, we can use it to build a covering array on G, and this is how we achieve this bound here. What we also can do is we can bound the covering array number of our weighted graph G by a lower bound here, which is the covering array number on the complete graph of size, clique number of our weighted graph G, and then bound it above by the complete graph of size chromatic number of our weighted graph G. This theorem arises from work done, it utilizes theorem 2, as well as a paper by Mora, Stardom, Stevens, and Williams that they did in the mixed case. This is basically giving an upper bound for the covering array number of a weighted graph G for graphs of small chromatic numbers, so chromatic number 2, 3, 4, and 5. If the chromatic number is 2, 3, or if it's 4 and 5 with these exceptions here, then we're able to give an upper bound of the covering array number, which is GK times GK minus 1. This product here is the largest alphabet in our weighted graph. Okay, so I'm not really going to go into too much detail with this. Once again, the qualitative independence graph was defined by Brett and Karen, and we've extended the work for the mixed case. So this is a special class of graphs, and what we did is we built, if we can find a weight-restricted graph homomorphism from our weighted graph G to our qualitative independence graph, then we know that a covering array of size N exists. And also, knowing the clique number and chromatic number for our weighted graph G, as well as our qualitative independence graph, allows us to give bound on our covering array number. So the problem of finding an optimal covering array on general graphs has been shown to be NP-hard. So it's not an easy problem to find the covering array number, even when restricted to the binary case. So it makes sense to look at special classes of graphs, and what we did is we looked at trees, cycles, and bipartite graphs. From a previous theorem, we saw that the covering array number is bounded above by GK times GK minus 1, and what we were able to do is we were able to build a covering array number, we were able to build a covering array of size PW of G, so we achieved the lower bound for trees, cycles, and bipartite graphs. So we'll see the constructions of how to do this. I have to define a couple of graph operations. We have our one vertex edge hooking, which basically says that we can insert a new edge where one end is going to be in our vertex set and another end will be a new vertex. We also have our edge duplication, which says that given any edge, we can just duplicate the edge. So create an edge that is parallel to an edge in our graph. And then finally, we do a weight-restricted edge subdivision, which is just a regular edge subdivision that does not increase our PW of G for our weighted graph G. So we have our graph G. It has its PW of G. We can subdivide the edge as long as we don't increase that PW of G. And these three operations here do not have an effect on the covering array number. So if we have a graph and we built a covering array, for that particular graph, applying any one of these operations will not affect the covering array number. Okay, so let's look at how we could optimally, how we can create a covering array for a tree. Basically, this example here is just to show you one vertex edge hooking, not really showing you what the exact covering array will be. So we have our tree here, five vertices, and PW of T is equal to 15. So that's our largest product weight between adjacent vertices. And we're going to build the tree first by starting with the edge that gives us our PW of T. So that's the edge with the alphabet. The alphabets are the labels on our vertices. So we're going to start with this edge here, and then all we do is, we have theorems that say that if we have a vertex, or a vector, then we can find a second vector that's qualitatively independent to it. And those two vectors will be the vectors of our covering array. Similarly, we have another theorem that says given any two vectors, we can find a third vector that's qualitatively independent to those two. So these are the two theorems that we're going to be using throughout to build our covering array. So I know that I could build a covering array on this edge here. And then now I apply successive one vertex edge hooking. So I can pick any vertex and I'm going to hook it to the to its neighbor. And similarly, I keep doing it until I obtain my tree T. And doing it like this, we actually build a covering array of size PW of T. It'll become more clear when I actually do the cycle construction, which is the more interesting example. So this is my five cycle. It's an odd cycle. If we wanted to build a covering array on the cycle below, once again, PW of C in this particular case is 9. I'm going to start with the edge that gives me my PW of C. So that's this edge here. The next step I have to do is apply edge duplication. Well, actually, I'm actually going to give you the covering array, the vectors in my covering array. So these two here are qualitatively independent. The second step is to apply edge duplication. Edge duplication has no effect on the covering array number, so nothing changes here. And you'll notice that the covering array has size 9, so the length of my vectors are 9. And then what we do is we apply successive weight-restricted edge subdivision, starting with the minimum weight vertices. And the reason we do that is to not violate our PW of T. We don't want to increase that, so we start with the smallest weight vertices. So what I did here is the vertices left are the 2, 2, and 4, so the CDE. I started with the 2. I chose this one here. There's no particular reason. I could have chosen the other one, too. And I subdivided. And now using the theorem before, I said that given any two qualitatively independent vectors, I can find a third that's qualitatively independent to them. And so this is the vector I'll be using. And then just keep doing that. So I'm going to subdivide with the 2. And then finally, I'm going to subdivide with the 4. And so these are my five vectors that form my covering array of size 9. So the covering array is size 9 on our cycle C with these alphabet weights on the vertices are alphabets. Okay, and then the final construction I want to show is my bipartite construction. What we did here is given any bipartite graph, we could build a covering array on the bipartite graph in a different manner. So the PW of G in this graph here is equal to 12, so it's this edge here. And we basically have a formula that tells us what the vectors in our covering array should be. So it has to be size 12 because we've achieved the lower bound. And basically on this side here, we're going to repeat each symbol from 0 to G minus 1. So in this case, G is 4, 2, 2, and 5. So we're going to repeat each symbol, PW of G divided by GI times. So this is what the vectors would look like on this part of the bipartite graph. So we repeat each symbol this many times. So PW of G is 12, 12 divided by 4. So each symbol is repeated 3 times, and so on for the other vertices. In the second part of our graph, we're going to repeat the symbols 0 to G minus 1. So now we're not repeating them in chunks. We're repeating 0, 1, 2 the same number of times, so 12 divided by 3 in this case, so 4 times. So we're repeating it 0, 1, 2, 0, 1, 2, 4 times, and so on for the rest. So we'll see that if we look at this, these two vertices here, they're qualitatively independent because our frame size here is 3, so 12 divided by 4. Our frame size here is also is 4, 12 divided by 3 is 4. So by the time I cover, go through the symbol 0, I'm going to be able to cover the pair 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 2. And then similarly, if I go through the symbol 1, then I'll be covering the pair 1, 0, 1, 1, 1, 2. And so I've achieved coverage between the pairs along here. That one is not really an interesting case because that was the case that gave us our PW. So if we look at a second example, this one here from the vertex of weight 2 to 5. So we'll see that the frame size here was 6, so 12 divided by 2 is 6. So we repeat each symbol 6 times. And the frame size here, we repeat the symbols twice. So we have 5 symbols that are repeated twice. So basically what's going to happen is we're going to have to go through all the symbols before the frame ends. And so that ensures that we get coverage between those vertices as well. So basically, our vectors are going to be qualitatively independent, and that's our bipartite construction. Some work that we've been working on are, we've solved for the uniform alphabet size, the cubic graph. So we solved it for the cubic graph and the wheels in the uniform case. And on a different note, we've been working on taboo search methods for covering arrays. We're implementing at the moment Stardom's algorithm, Normella's algorithm, and then an algorithm that we're working on, it's in progress, which combines the greedy techniques as well as a taboo search method in order to add and delete all columns, which are the test suites in our covering array. So this is something that is sort of new, and not a lot of work has been done here. So we're pretty optimistic, I should say. These are some references, and of course, our covering array workshop ad. I think you've seen it many times, but if the thing interests you, you should come down and hear more about it. Questions?